Hello and welcome back to the Royal Horticultural Society's Gardening Podcast. If you've listened before, you'll know that we're passionate about gardening and all things green. Each episode of our podcast is packed with practical seasonal advice and interviews. We share our thoughts, ideas, research into all aspects of horticulture, from growing orchids and cacti, pruning apple trees, getting rid of green fly, to growing fruit and veg. So, whether you're a horticultural veteran or a novice, in our podcasts, there's something to interest everyone who loves gardens. I'm Guy Barter, Chief Horticulturist here at the RHS. In today's podcast, we'll be discussing winter lawn maintenance and what to do in the vegetable garden now winter is coming. But first, question time. One of the many benefits of being an RHS member is that you can send your gardening questions to our expert advice team via phone, post, or email at any time of the year. Or even ask us in person by visiting the advice desks at RHS shows and events. And we'll try our best to solve your problems. So let's go to the team to discuss some of the questions you sent us this November.
Hello, I'm Lee Hunt from the RHS Gardening Advice team here at WISD. Today I'm joined by Guy Barter.
Hello.
And Jenny Bowden.
Hello.
Right, we've got some questions here. The first one's from Avril Danzak. I'd like to grow a columnar evergreen in a small space, so one that's tall and thin. She'd like some recommendations, and she'd like to know, she's seen juniper skyrocket growing upwards, and she wants to know, is that the right type of thing? And is it going to reach 2 to 4 metres relatively quickly in the next few years? Right, so sounds like she's already got something in mind, but I suppose, is that suitable? And have we got any other options?
I've got a couple of ideas that she might be interested in. You can go down the conifer route, so something like a chamois cypress, Lawson cypress, and there's a cultivar called Grayswood Pillar that she could be interested in. I mean, that'll be quite a good doer, you know, it's going to be quite a tolerant plant, and that should reach the 2 to 4 metres mark quite quickly. She could also look at Taxus, which is the yew, and there's a fustigiate form, and fustigiate just means exactly what she wants, upwards and not too much outwards, and that'll be good because you can trim it to shape, whereas some of the other conifers like the chamois cypress, they can go a bit brown sometimes, and then once you cut into that old wood, it doesn't regenerate. So yew is very good for being able to prune if you need to.
Yew's got a reputation for being much slower, is it?
It has that reputation, but if you plant it at a, don't go for a fully mature plant. Plant it perhaps at three foot, so around about the metre mark. You actually find that size plant will establish really well and can actually overtake something that's been planted at a greater height to start with. So it's not as fast as some of the other conifers, but I think people kind of sort of sway away from planting it because they think, oh no, that won't grow fast enough. But it's actually a very good doer. The other one I would consider is a holly, because again you can trim them to shape. So there's one called Green Pillar. So that again, very tolerant of a range of soil conditions.
Well, obviously she did mention about the juniper skyrocket, and it's actually one I've got in my own garden. And I chose it because, unlike the Italian cypress, which is another very popular choice, it's a lot hardier. And although you do get a little bit of winter burning, it gives you that Mediterranean feel like you're on the side of the Amalfi Coast. It did actually reach that kind of 2 metres within 3-4 years, and that now I think it's 10 years on, it's definitely reached that kind of 4-5 metre height. The only thing is that I don't think a lot of these very tall thin things are great in very exposed positions, so I'd be looking for a shelter spot, because I found mine had trouble actually establishing and not leaning in the initial strong winds, and I had to actually prop it back up and stake it, and then thankfully it settled and was okay.
I think you're right. Skyrocket is an excellent conifer, and I think would expect it to grow 50 centimetres, that's about 20 inches per year. There are other alternatives for these kind of exclamation point plants, and you can see a lot of them at RHS Chelsea. The kind of things that you see include clipped conifers like the Western Red Cedar, that's Fuya occidentalis Rheingold, and sometimes you see Pittosporums and Portugal laurels, also clipped, kind of toperized, which are very hardy and inexpensive plants. And if they all go horribly wrong, you can cut them back and start again, which is not always possible with a conifer.
So it really sounds like there's lots of options here. It's choose the one you'd like to look of and have a go.
So we've got a letter here from C. Bromley, who says, during the spring to summer, my Brussels sprout plants, they're grown from seed. They were transplanted into new beds, firmed down by treading the soil. After a few weeks, some of these plants have been showing rather poor growth, rather similar to the symptoms that you get with cabbage root fly. But when they pulled them up, the roots were intact. But there were cavities in the soil, leaving the roots out of contact and just hanging there in the air. So what could the culprit be? Mice, voles, moles, or perhaps something else? Guy, what do you think?
Well, I think that we got to focus on this cavity situation. What do they mean by cavities? Do they mean there's a tunnel running along the row? This quite often happens, and it's typically moles which are looking for the worms that are growing beneath the watered area of your row. But if they're moles, you get molehills, and that's a bit of a giveaway. And there's no mention of molehills here. So it's possible that voles and mice could be involved, and this is quite unusual, but it's not out of the way. It's also possible that there were some problems with planting, and that in fact that when they were planted the hole was not properly firmed in, so that too needs to be looked at. Unfortunately, it's not at all uncommon for tunnels to develop underneath Brussels sprout plants, indeed all plants in the vegetable garden. But if you merely tread them in with your feet, press them in really hard, give them a drink with some liquid fertiliser and a good soak, they'll tend to recover quite quickly and there's no need to pull them up.
We have an email from Paul Moffitt from Reading. I have a rhododendron that's recently died in my garden. Unfortunately, I don't have a sample to send you, but he says, I've planted it about 8 years ago in a bed with other rhododendrons. This summer the plant died and the leaves were brown and curly and they curled in on each other and had white scale insects underneath and they were on the back of the leaves. When he dug up the plant, he investigated the roots and they had yellow roots which were all squidgy as if it had been waterlogged but the soil was dry. He doesn't have an irrigation system and it's planted under a large tree where you'd expect the soil to be dry. Do you know what caused the plant to die? Well, got quite a lot of detail there, but what could be causing it?
Well, the plant has been growing perfectly satisfactorily for 8 years, apparently, so it's unlikely that there was something wrong with the plant or the way it was planted. So when a plant that's well established suddenly ups and dies and the roots are squishy and rotted, then one has to suspect a fungal disease or a fungus-like disease like Phytophthora that has rotted out and destroyed the roots. And unfortunately, there's no remedy for this but to replace the plant, ideally replacing the soil at the same time. And when you replace the soil, you go as deep as the subsoil and for a diameter of about a metre, that's more or less 3 feet, and get in fresh soil from your veg garden or something similar.
The marks on the back of the leaves are a bit of a white elephant in a way, or red herring, I should say. It's just there to confuse us. It may well have been suffering from scale insects as well, just capitalising on perhaps a slightly weaker plant. Yes, it could be Phytophthora. It could also be honey fungus, which will also lead to that the same symptom of the leaves wilting and turning in on themselves. It gives the impression of drought, but it just means the roots aren't working properly. It might be useful if he had samples that our advisory team could actually, our pathologists could have a look and work out the exact cause, because it will inform what you put back in that spot. But if you replace the soil, you're well on your way to having a healthy plant in the future.
Just to clarify, scale insects are not fatal to rhododendrons. Mm. Our Wisley rhododendrons have got a surprisingly large population of scale insects, but they seldom succumb.
Guy, often people worry that once they've got one plant, like this rhododendron in a bed of rhododendrons, the rest are going to go. What's the reality, do you think?
Well, of course, that's why it's important to remove any plant that dies as quickly as possible, because it is perfectly feasible that disease will spread from one plant to another. Quite why disease strikes one plant and not another is not entirely clear, but what is clear is that there's no remedy at this time, no way you can protect the remaining plants except prompt removal of the infected plant and all its roots.
So it's don't panic, but do take action.
Well, panicking won't accomplish anything. Every so often one does lose the occasional plant. We lose the occasional plant here at Wisley, and our policy is to whip them out as fast as possible and replace as required. The next question is from Vivian Palmer. During the summer, I have had swarms of black flies in the garden, which I believe to be fungus gnats. They are all over many plants in a mixed herbaceous border, which contains box balls, and also plants such as Iris siberica, penstemon, crocosmia, and roses, and many more. The border is approximately 3 metres by 6 metres, which is about 10 foot by 20 foot. The flies are falling away now, they're diminishing. Presumably this is due to a drop in temperature. Is there anything that can be done to prevent them coming back next year?
Right, well, I trotted down the corridor to see our entomologist Hayley Jones, who you might have heard on previous podcasts, to find out a little bit more about this one, because it struck me instantly that it wasn't likely to be a specific plant pest. So in the way that we might expect pale green leaf hoppers on the surface with a lot of these plants, it doesn't sound like that. Her response was that, well, it could be one of 7,000 flies in Britain, so it doesn't sound like a plant pest and we probably don't need to worry. But what she did add is, as we go into winter, we do get what we call winter gnats, which do kind of fit this description of being small black flies. And they're not harmful to plants, and therefore there isn't any spray or etc. that you could use to control them. You do actually usually get a little bit of an increase as you go into the late autumn, early winter, and then quite rapidly you get a drop away again. So it's one of those things not to really worry from a plant point of view, but you will often see them later in the season and then they sort of disappear for their time.
It's worth mentioning that in windy weather, they're much less of a problem, and its conditions have been quite still this autumn. So once the winter gales come in, they'll be swept away.
What I haven't explained, of course, is what fungus gnats are. I bet you've seen these.
No, these aren't fungus gnats, because fungus gnats are associated with the soil. These are a different kind of midge or gnat. The fungus gnat feeds on rotting organic matter. Typically it's found in potted plants, especially where peat-free composts are used that contain green waste, or where the compost has been overwatered, or indeed both. But they're not a big problem outdoors, only in the greenhouse and windowsill.
Right, John Cole says, our garden is full of wild garlic. It's growing everywhere in the borders and even grows in the lawn. How can he get rid of it?
Well, wild garlic is very pretty in wild places, and it has these wonderful white flower heads. And when you go for a walk through the woods, often you'll get this crushing of leaves that releases the wild garlic smell. So obviously, in one sense, it's a wild flower, but in the wrong place, of course, it becomes a weed. And it's a bulb, so you've only got a short period of time really to know where it is to begin to control. But then it's not the easiest thing to actually get to grips with. What are your tips, Guy, for this?
Well, I think let's start with the easiest and go for the lawn. No plant can survive if the mower removes its leaves, so I'm inclined to feed the lawn with lawn fertilizer starting in spring, and I mean early spring really, which would be March, and induce good strong grass growth. And then it's a bit of a fag, but your lawn will be better for it and the garlic won't like it at all. Mow regularly, keeping the grass well mown down. The grass, having shallow roots and being fed with lawn fertilizer, will love being mown and come back strongly. The wild garlic, having deep roots and not benefiting from the fertilizer, will be significantly weakened. Now, I'm not saying you can get rid of it in 1 year, because that would be rather too optimistic, but this process could, if repeated over several years, reduce it to a non-problem in the lawn, really. Also, it's worth doing the usual lawn maintenance, and it's not too late to do it now. Our turf team here at Wisley are still working away on the lawns, of spiking, raking in top dressing, and a bit of autumn lawn fertiliser. Get that grass growing and squeeze the garlic out. However, in borders, it's a much more difficult problem. Have you got any thoughts on that, Jenny?
Well, obviously you can't dig the roots out or the bulbs out or bulb ills, because they propagate themselves from all sorts of areas, alliums do, garlic does. So really what you would need to do is bruise the foliage slightly and apply a glyphosate-based weed killer such as Roundup or Tumbleweed just to the leaves that you actually want to get rid of. But you've got to be very, very careful with that. And it's not just a one-hit wonder either. You're going to have to persist with that in subsequent years. And the leaves are only around for a few weeks. So the idea would be to get them just as they're just before they're flowering.
And when are those leaves around?
It's April time, really. Yeah, April, probably into May. And then they start to die back, then they disappear, and then you'll forget that there was a problem.
The RHS Gardening Advice Team. If you're a member, you can contact the team by phone, post or email, or anyone can chat to us in person in our gardens or any of the RHS flower shows. Do approach our advice stand. We don't bite. And if you aren't a member, why not join? You can find details of all the benefits of membership on our website, rhs.org.uk/join. A subject that concerns many of the gardeners that contact RHS advisors is lawn care. Spring and autumn are the key times of the year for giving grass some loving care and attention to ensure it looks and feels its best the following summer. The lawn team here at Wisley have been extremely busy in the last few weeks, tending to the huge swathes of green around the garden. We spoke to team leader James Bourne about the techniques to use to prepare and repair damaged turf for the year ahead.
Well, we're currently doing autumn maintenance. So by autumn maintenance, I mean we scarify, we aerate our lawn, so we spike it, and then we start putting autumn feeds down. So autumn feeds would be a very low nitrogen-based feed, more phosphorus to try and boost up the root growth to sort of survive it for the winter, to stop it from turning yellow, shall we say. So, like I said, the scarifying, we use a machine, and it's got like a circular blade that digs itself into the lawn and almost rips it up. Afterwards, it looks a bit of a mess, but, you know, it's a necessary process. We do that process twice, different directions, and the reason for this is to reduce the amount of thatch, not moss. Thatch is dead... died a sort of dead grass matter that can build up over the summer period, and you've got to reduce it. So you've got to do this very destructive method to get it out. As soon as you've cleared all that, you aerate it, which is spiking. That puts more air into the lawn and also reduces the amount of compaction in your lawn. And then also you can add top dressings into those areas where you've aerated, improving the soil structure by using sands or ordinary compost that you use at home. You put it over the lawn and then you just rake it in or brush it in. So you can use your household brush just to brush it all in. And what it would do, it would go into those holes where you've aerated, and in theory, just like I said, it would improve the soil structure of your lawn, making it easier for next year. You can put a little bit of seed down if you want to. The only thing you've got to fight against is the low temperatures, so you've got to make sure you put something that's quite strong. So when you're looking for a grass, you want to put a perennial grass, which is a grass that survives through the winter months. As soon as you put your seed down, you can put down your autumn feed. Now, an autumn feed, as I said before, it's a different type of mix. It's a low nitrogen, whereas obviously in the spring you put a high nitrogen. Nitrogen makes the grass go green, whereas you want more phosphorus, which goes into root growth, so that survives during the winter months. And you end up getting it just keeps it strong for the winter, because grass does sort of close itself into the winter months. It doesn't like to grow, and then of course you get diseases that come through. So all these processes will eliminate it, and also it stops the build-up of moss happening, which typically happens in the winter because of all the moisture in your lawn. The last time we cut them, hopefully after you scarified them, really, that you tend to put them to bed. And if you were to mow your lawn, it's just to give it a little bit of a topping, so you have it on the highest setting. So you can keep mowing up to beginning of December. However, last year I was mowing up to Christmas Day, just because we didn't have many frosts and the grass was still actively growing. And then, you know, then we reached winter, then we decided to leave them just to bush up a bit. And then we presume the mowing end of February, beginning of March.
James Bourne from the Wisley Garden Team. If you'd like more information and practical tips about lawn care or about other key jobs in your garden this month, why not visit the advice pages of our website, rhs.org.uk/advice. With Christmas fast approaching, there are lots of seasonal garden events for you to enjoy around the UK in the next few weeks. For a magical day out, come and meet Santa at Wisley this festive season between the 1st and 23rd of December. Join us for a story and a song, or a gingerbread decorating workshop. Booking is essential. Rosemore's Winter Sculpture Exhibition runs from 19th of November to 19th of February. Come and see an eclectic mix of exhibits from a diverse collection of sculptors. Santa will be extra busy this year, as he'll be putting in an appearance not just at Wisley, but at Hyde Hall's Children's Magic of Christmas on the 25th to the 27th of November and 2nd of December to the 4th of December. Booking is essential. If you're looking for unusual presents that you can't find on the High Street, pop into the Bathhouse Gallery at Harlow Carr for a Christmas gift of a difference from our Christmas Crafts Showcase, which runs until 27th of November. Details of these and many other events are available on our website at rhs.org.uk/gardenswhatson. You're listening to the RHS Gardening Podcast. At this time of year, the horticultural teams at Wisley are busy preparing beds, borders and prize plants for the coming winter. In the model vegetable garden, the teams are busy planting, picking and preparing new raised beds.
My name's Paul Cattell. I'm team leader of edibles here at Wisley. So I manage a team that look after the veg garden, the herb garden, trained fruit, the orchard and vineyard. What are we doing? We're preparing for winter, really. It's November. So here in the veg garden, there's the crops, the number of crops we have are much less than earlier in the year. We have, where crops have finished, we've sown green manures. These are a great addition to a veg garden. They protect the soil over the winter. They stop it getting, the nutrients getting leached out by heavy winter rain. They protect the soil structure from getting damaged by heavy rain. So you actually sow a plant in there, get a very densely coverage of plant growth. Protects the soil. Come the spring, we dig that plant in, chop it up, dig it into the soil, and all the nutrients that are locked up in that plant get released out into the soil. If we choose the right ones as well, we can choose leguminous ones which fix nitrogen as well from the air and store that in nodules in their roots, which then, as you chop them up, get released as well. So we get that manure benefit without actually adding manure onto those patches of soil. You can do a tiny small patch of that. You know, you can do it in between two crops with a very short-lived green manure. We can get special ones that are winter hardy, which will last you the whole winter. A little bit late to sow them now, so the ones you see in our garden, we've sown probably from the end of August through September and even into early October. But once you get into the end of October, the lower light levels and colder weather mean it's you'd struggle to get many green manures to establish at this time of year. But it's certainly a great thing to do in the autumn. Just behind you here, we've got some great looking Brussels sprouts. They're small at the minute. We can see their stems looking really attractive with the sprouts sitting on there. They're going to be swelling up over the next few weeks, probably in about 3 weeks' time, probably the end of November, we'll be picking those. So we've got a nice harvest of sprouts going on. So we've still got crops going at this time of year, although there are fewer crops than earlier in the season. You'll notice a number of covers over crops as well. So we've got, they're just keeping a bit of winter protection and keeping the pigeons off as well, which love the brassicas. But we do have some spring calabrese on its way, some spring cabbages and some cauliflowers as well, all in the ground. They're going to stay there the whole winter. With a bit of protection from the pigeons, keeps a little bit of the worst of the weather off as well, and they'll give us a nice crop early next year. We've got some lovely crops of chard over there, some rainbow chard. See the yellow and the red poking through the green. Quite a size actually to that chard. That's a lovely crop. The baby leaves in the middle, and the newer, younger leaves, great in a salad. The larger leaves you'd want to chop up and maybe cook a little bit, steam them or stir fry them, something like that. So the stem in the middle, the midrib, gets a bit tough. We've got some bitter leaves which do very well in the cooler weather of the autumn. So chicory, radicchio, really good in this addition to a salad. They're doing fantastic. And some turnips as well, which were sown when the carrots finished at the end of the summer or in the summer. We cleared the carrots, sowed some turnips, and they're ready to harvest now as well. Under our final crop, under our frames there, the glass frames, we've still got a lovely harvest of peppers and aubergines. Been grown under glass frames, no heat at all, outside all summer. We've been opening those frames during the day to let lots of ventilation in, closing them with the cooler evenings, but we've got a nice crop there as well to pick any time now.
Paul Cattell, leader of the fruit, vegetable and herb team here at Wisley. That's all we have time for in this edition. Remember, you can now download our special December edition of the RHS Members Podcast, which, as an early Christmas treat, is going to be available to everyone, whether or not you're already an RHS member. It features in-depth horticultural advice and an inspirational interview with Baroness Floella Benjamin, the newly appointed RHS Ambassador for Young People and Communities. That special programme is available to download for free from iTunes and from the RHS website. That's all for now. We'll be back in a fortnight. Until then, don't forget that you can follow us on Twitter at @the_RHS and like us on Facebook. For now, from me, Guy Barter, and all the podcast team, goodbye.